Welcome to No Longer Conformed. I'm Eric Garthy, and we are studying Bedrock to Build On, a series on non-negotiable truths. In this session, we'll be looking at Isaiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. The Lord is God. What do you do when the bottom drops out? Life has a way of walking up and just smacking you in the teeth. There are times when you need the rock-solid things that don't and won't change. And you need them nailed down before the crisis strikes, because all you will have in those moments is what you had before they hit. Over the next several sessions, we'll consider six foundational realities that you must have in place to build on. Bedrock truths that will get you through the crises that come during life. What's the most important truth you'll ever hear? Well, Psalm 100 in verse 3 says, "Know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture." It's that simple, right? In America, year after year, polls have reported that about 90% of us say we believe in God. But when the comfort of our life turns into chaos, that claim can prove hollow. Do you have this truth nailed down? The Lord, He's God. Let's consider one who did, Isaiah. He faced a personal crisis. His testimony and actions revealed a man who had a clear view of God. Let's read our text, Isaiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. In verse 1, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above it stood seraphim. Each one had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one cried to another and said, 'Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory.' And the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of him who cried out, and the house was filled with smoke." The first phrase of this passage reveals the crisis for Isaiah. King Uzziah, who had ruled over Judah for 52 years, was dead. Some of us can remember when President Kennedy was killed and how we felt at that moment. The news report began, "The president is dead." The throne of David was vacant at the worst possible time. Assyria's armies took advantage of the moment and began its march on Judah. Everyone was preoccupied with the news about Assyria. Terror grew in every citizen's heart. Isaiah's world was falling apart. And then Isaiah saw God for who he is. And he never mentioned the king again. What did he see? What did he say about God? And what do we need to know today? First, God is alive. King Uzziah was dead, but God lives on. Psalm 90 verse 2 says, "Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. God was the living God when this universe exploded into existence. He was the living God when Socrates drank his poison. He was the living God when William Bradford governed Plymouth Colony. He was the living God in 1966 when Thomas Altizer proclaimed him dead and Time magazine put it on the front cover. And he will be living 10,000 years from now. In 120 years, this planet is estimated to be populated by 10 billion brand new people. And all 6 billion of us alive today will be gone. But not God. He had no beginning, which means he depends on nothing for his existence. He always has been and always will be alive. Second, God is in charge. Second part of verse 1, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne. No vision of heaven has ever revealed God plowing a field, cutting grass, filling out reports, loading a truck. Heaven is not fighting to hold on against an army of attackers. God doesn't have to take a second job to make ends meet. He sits on a throne. He has absolute control. We do not give God authority over our lives. We do not make Him Lord. He is the Lord, exercising authority whether we like it or not. The issues of your life and mine are not beyond the scope of His Lordship. He even controls the extent of our experiences. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13 gives testimony to that. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to men or to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Third, God is omnipotent. The third part of verse 1, a throne high and lifted up. The throne of God's authority is not one of many. It's higher than every throne. He has absolute power to exercise His will. Isaiah chapter 46 and verse 10, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do my pleasure. All my pleasure. Daniel wrote in Daniel chapter 4 and verse 35, all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to His will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain His hand or say to Him, what have you done? By contrast, we're creatures, little specks on a small planet in a universe that is incomprehensibly large. The universe that God made. We are dependent, needing resources outside of ourselves. Where do we get our needs met? We are sustained by the Lord God, the maker of heaven and earth. Excuse me. The omnipotence of God is either wonderful because He's for us or terrifying because He's against us. If we are indifferent to His power, it's only because we aren't paying attention. He reigns. Fourth, God is magnificent. The fourth part of verse 1. And the train of His robe filled the temple. You've seen paintings of kings with the train of their royal robe following a few feet behind them. You've seen pictures of brides with trains that stretch over the steps of the platform. What would it mean? What would it be like if the train filled the aisles and covered all the seats? God's robe filled the entire heavenly temple. His magnificence has no equal. He is wonderful to look at and royal in His majesty. Fifth, God is reverenced. Verses 2 and the first part of verse 4. Above it stood seraphim. Each one had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. These strange creatures don't appear anywhere else in the Bible, at least not with the name seraphim. They are as powerful as the scene itself. According to verse 4, and the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of him who cried out. And yet, they can't look at the Lord. They don't even leave their feet exposed in his presence. They reverence their maker in great humility. Think about it. An angel terrifies a man by his appearance and power, but angels themselves hide in fear and reverence from the face of God. And then six, God is holy. First part of verse 3. And one cried to another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. Every effort to define the holiness of God winds up at the same place. God is holy means God is God. The root meaning of the word means to cut or to separate. A holy thing is cut off from and separated from any common use. Earthly things and persons are made holy when they are distinct from the world and devoted to God. The Bible speaks of holy grounds in Exodus 3:5, holy assemblies in Exodus 12:16, holy nation in Exodus 19:6, holy garments in Exodus 28:2, holy city in Nehemiah 11:1, holy men, 2 Peter 1:21, holy women, 1 Peter 3:5. Almost anything can become holy if it is separated from common use and devoted to God. What happens when this definition is applied to God Himself? From what can you separate God to make Him holy? The very godness of God means that He's separate from all that is not God, which means that God is one of a kind, in a class by Himself. He is completely holy. We run out of language before we can describe the holiness of God. In fact, the prophet Habakkuk tells us we should stop trying in Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 20. But the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. And seventh, God is glorious. The second part of verse 3 and the second part of verse 4. The whole earth is full of His glory, and the house was filled with smoke. The glory of God is the manifestation of His holiness. The glory of God is the revelation of who He is. Leviticus chapter 10 and verse 3. And Moses said, this is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all the people, I must be glorified. That's the kind of God I want and I need, with the power to handle my problems. with the knowledge to guide me through the issues I face, with appearance that captures my attention, a God that demands my allegiance, a God who is completely different from me in holiness, yet who calls me to become like Himself, a God who forgives me and has purposes for me, a God who is there for me. In the events of life, those times of crisis, we need the bedrock foundation of trusting the Lord who is God. You have a great day.